Nicole and Rick Fraser met while working in the same restaurant in Woodbury years ago. They eventually married and relocated to Nicole's hometown of Hudson. After going through a turbulent time in the restaurant industry during the pandemic, the two of them decided it was the right time to fulfill Rick's dream of opening a restaurant in the town he lived in. The couple eventually found a vacancy downtown Hudson and opened Black Rooster Bistro in 2022, bringing an elevated dining experience to the great food scene here in town. After learning some lessons early in the process, Rick and Nicole have hit their stride with the restaurant, which has continued to be a valuable asset to Hudson. They believe in supporting local in a number of different ways through the restaurant, which they talk about more on this week's episode of St. Croix Stories. I'm your host, Tyler Mason. Join me for my conversation with Rick and Nicole Fraser, co-owners of Black Rooster Bistro. Well, earlier on the St. Croix Stories podcast, we had one of the guests, Paul Rohde, mention a restaurant downtown that really brought a lot to the downtown scene, and that was Black Rooster Bistro. And I'm excited to have the owners of Black Rooster Bistro on the podcast today, Nicole and Rick Fraser. Nicole and Rick, how are you guys doing today?
Hi, Tyler.
I'm doing pretty well.
Good, good. We were just talking about podcasts. I know Rick was saying he's a big podcast fan. Nicole listens to this one, which I appreciate. So thank you both for that. Well, let's maybe just start with some introductions. I guess if one of you wants to kind of just say who you are and maybe what you guys do.
My name is Nicole Fraser. I am a longtime Hudsonite. I grew up here in town, graduated Hudson High School, moved to St. Paul for a little while, went to college on that side of town, moved back here about 8 years ago now, been living back in Hudson, and super excited to be a real part of the community. Working in the town you live in has such a different feel than living here and driving to Minneapolis, St. Paul all the time. Like, you can really connect to the community. So we're super excited to be business owners here in town.
Very cool. And then Rick, how about you?
I grew up just across the river in Oakdale, went to chef school right after high school and kind of bounced around Minneapolis and St. Paul working for a while. And we moved out here to Hudson, and it's always been a dream that I've had to open a restaurant in the town that I live in. And yeah, we ended up in Hudson here, and things are going great so far.
Yeah, awesome. Well, and Nicole, you mentioned you grew up here in Hudson. We were talking about some of the things that you did growing up here, including coming to the library, which we're at right now. But what do you remember about the food scene and the restaurant scene growing up here in town?
Interestingly enough, I remember Act Two, which was the original restaurant in the location that we're at in the basement of the Opera House building. It was built as a restaurant and opened as Act Two late 70s.
Okay.
They renovated that space 1978, 1979. And you know how it's like having young kids yourself. Yeah. Going out to dinner is a real big deal,
yeah.
Right? Like, you don't do it all the time because it's not easy. And it's, you know, the budget at that point in your life is pretty tight. So going out to dinner is a big deal. And I remember being how big of a deal it was for my whole family, all four of us, to go out to a sit-down dinner at Act Two restaurant. So that was kind of cool. Other than that, I mean, I remember, like, we had like an Uncle Barney's, which was a pizza place that was cool for kids, right? So that I remember. That was up. And in the bowling alleys have been there. I remember eating and bowling there. And other than that, Stars Bar and Pudge's. My dad bartended part-time when I was little to kind of help make ends meet on like Friday, Saturday nights. So maybe I remember too much of the bar scene as a child, because it was a treat to go visit dad at work on Friday night. Sure. I remember helping him wash dishes, wash glasses behind the bar at Stars Bar with their cool like brush washer for the glasses.
So you had an early introduction into working in the
industry. Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. Well, and Rick, you mentioned you grew up not far away in Oakdale. Did you make it to Hudson much growing up, or what was your familiarity with Hudson kind of as a kid?
We actually did. There was always this big thing growing up that we were going to ride our bikes to Hudson. I don't think I ever made that trek. I know my brother and my dad did, but we would come over quite a bit. My dad liked to buy work clothes at Fleet Farm. So we would come over to the old Fleet Farm. It's now the warehouse for the new Fleet Farm. We'd hang out there, and then we'd go to Aves' Taxidermy. Back then, it was crazy because it was a taxidermy shop and a cheese shop. So we would buy cheese And I would look at the jackalopes that they had on the walls. And then, yeah, we would drive back. And I remember back then it felt so far away because there was nothing between 494, 694 and Interchange and the bridge.
Yeah.
So when you saw the bridge, we'd get all excited, my brother and I in the car, because we knew we were getting close.
Yeah.
But yeah, we'd come over quite a bit. There was a lot of stuff in Hudson that I didn't know about until I lived in Hudson, like Willow River. And, you know, we went to the falls the first time and I was like, I've lived this close to these whole time and I didn't even know they were here. So that's been one of the cool things about living in Hudson now. But yeah, we made it over quite a bit growing up.
That would have been a good bike ride to get here. I don't know how many miles that it would be, but that's a healthy ride for
sure. Yeah, it was. And I think it was teenage years that my brother made the trek. But we always talked about it when we were kids. We'll ride our bikes to the river. And then we'd start and we'd stop.
Yeah.
Get bored with the ride and turn around.
Sure. Well, you mentioned, both of you kind of alluded to, you've got backgrounds in the restaurant industry before Black Rooster Bistro, and you actually met working at the same restaurant in Woodbury. Tell me about what it was like in those early days working together, maybe when you met, and I don't know when you first started dating, but one of the two of you want to start with that one. Maybe we'll go with Nicole first.
I was working at Cravings Wine Bar in Woodbury. My kids were little. It was kind of after the housing market crash. I had lost my job. Went to art school, had an art degree. I was working as an art instructor and had been laid off. My unemployment ran out and you're kind of like, now what?
Yeah.
With two little kids, it doesn't really make sense to put them in daycare because at the end of the week, your paycheck doesn't cover anything other than the daycare.
Right.
I think the kids were 1 and 3 when I started working at the wine bar again, offered flexible schedule, you know, fair amount of income in a short amount of time. I had worked here in Hudson at Country Kitchen was my first job. Now it's Milwaukee Burger.
Yeah.
And then I worked at the chain of Ciotti's restaurants in college, the Woodbury location and the St. Paul location. So I had history in the restaurant industry. So it was a good position for me to come back to at the time. New guy started in the kitchen. Richard is on the application, right? So like I always called him Richard for a really long time because that's what it said on the application. And that was his name. And we worked together, started dating. And I remember vividly one time, the first time probably, that I maybe spoke out of turn in the kitchen. In his kitchen at the wine bar.
Rick's laughing. We can't see him.
He's laughing. He's laughing. And I spoke to him like he was my boyfriend, and I was quickly put in my place because I was just a server, right? And he was like the chef, and I spoke to him like he was my boyfriend, and I was quickly told how that was not appropriate, and I was so mad. I was so mad. I was mad for about 24 hours. I was really mad for about 24 hours, and then I was like, oh, yeah, he's right. Doesn't happen very often, but he was right that day.
Rick, what do you remember about just kind of working together early on and that whole part of your guys' journey together?
Yeah, I had started there just as a grill cook. I worked for Bon Appetit Management Company for, I think, 10, 11 years before that. And I just got to a point where I wanted a change. So I took some time off. I had been working at the Minnesota Fair and had some extra cash saved up from that. And took about a month off just to figure out what my next move was going to be. And then came across the wine bar, started working there, and probably within a year, maybe a year and a half, I became the executive chef there. And I remember seeing Nicole walk through the kitchen on a few busy nights, but we never really got to talk to each other until maybe, I would say, probably around the time that everybody in the restaurant started playing trivia. And then the group kind of became a really close-knit family. But yeah, I remember having fun. It was a fun job. We had a lot of fun. We got to do pretty much whatever we wanted in the kitchen, my sous chef and I. And I just remember it being a good time. A lot of good memories.
I imagine, though, during the job, it's hard to, like you said, find time to talk to each other. So you had to make time to make it happen outside of work.
It gets a little crazy, especially the way that kitchen was set up. I was kind of off in the corner away from everybody. So it was usually just me in the corner by myself flipping steaks and burgers. And responding to the ticket calls, but it was a good time though.
Well, that journey eventually led you guys to here to Hudson, as we talked about a little bit ago. But at what point did you start to think that the two of you might want to open a restaurant? I know Rick, you said it had been a dream of yours for a long time, but at what point did you maybe think it could be a reality?
I think for us, the conversation really started to happen when the COVID shutdowns happened. Nicole had been part of that first group of layoffs when COVID happened, everything shut down for the 2 weeks and then some places opened back up. I was able to keep my job working at the St. Paul Hotel because we continued doing room service. We had some people who were regulars at the hotel move into the hotel because they felt it was a safer place to be.
Sure.
And we would cook room service. It was myself and the executive chef of the hotel. That was all that was there. So we were able to push that along for 3 or 4 months. And then they started to reopen everything. And at that point, I had the opportunity to open a restaurant in Minneapolis for the company. And then that eventually, when the second round of full shutdowns happened, that put me out of work at that mm-hmm. point. So we kind of sat around for a little while. And then we kind of got to talking about it. And it was one of those situations where it came out to be, we're either going to do this now or we're both just going to go back and keep working as hard as we're working for everybody else. And this is the chance that we're going to take and take it or leave it.
Yeah.
So Nicole reached out, started doing some searches, came across the Windsor Stube through a broker. But at the time, we didn't know it was a Windsor Stube. It was just, I have a restaurant in Hudson that you should look at. So when we looked at it, but it was under agreement, purchase agreement with somebody else. So we kind of were like, well, I guess I'll just, because at that point, Morrissey had called me back up and said, hey, we're going to open the grill back up, come back to work. So the other restaurant in Minneapolis first. So I went back and started doing that. And then we got a call a couple months later that the first deal fell through if we were still interested. And we basically kind of looked at each other and said, we're either going to be sitting in a retirement home when we're 80 saying, I wish we would have taken that shot, or we're going to look back and be like, we opened a restaurant and we worked for ourselves and we showed our kids that being an entrepreneur is something that you can do.
Yeah.
So we just kind of went with it and threw caution to the wind. And the moment it all sank in for me was the last day of work for Morrissey on the 31st of January. And I kind of remember walking to my car and thinking, I really hope this works. And so far it's been pretty great. I don't know. Did I miss anything on that?
No, pretty accurate. I think I tell that story a lot more than you do. I get to talk to customers on a daily basis right. and tell the story. People ask at the restaurant. I tell the story a lot. And I mean, I think one of the things was that with the St. Paul Grill, it's a very prestigious restaurant. Yeah. Being the executive chef there is a very prestigious position.
Yeah.
But not super fulfilling as far as creativity in the food.
Sure. Right?
It's steak on a plate. It's always been steak on a plate.
Yeah.
Pretty easy. He's like, a monkey could do my job. I put kale on the plate and, you know, put it on a tray. So what was missing from that position was the creativity with food and his enjoyment of that. And I think I knew that was missing, but I think COVID helped him realize that was missing too. So going back after having 7 months off, it was kind of like, oh yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
This isn't as fulfilling as I would like it to be. I don't want to spend my whole day in an office doing paperwork and dealing with HR. Like I want to be creating and cooking and doing what Rick is passionate about, which is really good food. So to have that happen and just realize that it's kind of now or never. I mean, we're in our 40s, you know, or it's, he said it right. I remember the conversation of being, saying, I don't want to look at you when we're 80 and say, I wish we would have.
Yeah.
Right?
So no regrets.
Yeah. No regrets. So it's like you got to at least try.
Yeah.
We got to at least try. And at that point, it was you got to at least try because this was your dream. And I was all like, I'm fine. I was working at Brick and Bourbon downtown Stillwater. Okay. I had helped open that location. I was working the bar program there part-time. Like I had great schedule, making good money. I was like, I'll keep that. You do this, you know, not put all of our eggs in one basket. We've got two kids and a mortgage.
Right.
Like, this is scary stuff. And we had signed the purchase agreement in November. We're still under an NDA. So no one really knows this is going on. No one knows that the Windsor Stube is closing. But we know. And then December rolls around and he looks at me and he's like, I don't think I could do it without you. Like, who would I get to run the front of the house? Who could I trust with the bar program? And I was like, darn it. Like, you're right. Yeah, right. It only makes sense to have us both in. And so I was like, okay, let's both quit our W-2 jobs, you know? So it was risky. It was scary.
Yeah. Well, I'm curious. You mentioned kind of
looking at locations, I'm curious, was Hudson always kind of the spot you were looking, or you mentioned the Windsor Stube obviously is where it is now. Did that take me through how that kind of came about or how you found that space?
Yeah, good question. Rick had mentioned we, contacted a broker because there was a restaurant property in Hudson that was available in our price range, and we didn't know what the property was, but we reached out anyways. And Rick's dream had definitely been to open a restaurant in the city that he lives in, because as I mentioned before, your relationship to the community changes. To be a part of that community, to give back to that community, to employ mm-hmm. people in that community, all part of his root dream. And so Hudson was definitely it. When we found out that the property we were interested in was under contract, the broker was like, well, I have this property in River Falls and this property in River Falls and this other property a little bit farther into Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. And it was like, oh.
Not quite the same.
Yeah. Hudson already had a really great food scene. So to be able to be a part of that, almost by default, to having it be part of his dream and a really good food scene, and to put those two together, it was a great opportunity. River Falls wasn't quite maybe where we wanted to be. Any farther out, it changes your demographic. Yeah. So Hudson really was ideal for what we were looking to do.
Rick, did you kind of know at that point what the concept for the restaurant was that you wanted to open, or what the menu would look like? Or, I mean, how far along in that process were you? Or is that still kind of being, crafted as the space came together and everything kind of, the pieces were put into place?
A loose idea was there. I liked thinking about the food that we put out when we worked at the wine bar. And I had the ability to do some specials of that caliber at the grill, but I knew it was going to be something along the lines of what we had. We weren't quite sure if it was going to be a wine bar, if it was going to be like a gastro pub or whatever. But then I came across, I have a culinary training that's classically French, and I thought about the bistros in France, where it's kind of a little more heavy on the food elegance and not so much the hefty price. So we kind of figured that would probably be the right way to go, because we didn't want to get pigeonholed by being a wine bar and then having to have a ton of wine and not being able to still fulfill how local we wanted our restaurant to be. It was loosely there. We worked a lot. A lot of the conversations about what it was going to be happened as we were tearing down walls and sure. swinging sledgehammers and things in the building as we were going. But yeah, there was a loose idea of what we wanted it to be. And I think a lot of it came down to kind of, it sounds weird, but what the space was telling us it wanted to be.
Sure.
Because it ended up being more speakeasy-ish, and we were kind of not cool with that. But at the end, I think it kind of fits us for what we do and where we're at. Sure. So, yeah, I think everything turned out the way that it was supposed to. But there was a loose idea in the beginning, but nothing really concrete.
Gotcha. Well, and now we've mentioned the Windsor Stube a couple times now, German restaurant that had been here for, I think, over 30 years. I guess for either of you, and Nicole, you probably remember going there maybe as a kid, or at least you knew of it growing. I mean, as you're putting the restaurant together, was there any sort of sense of pressure of, replacing this kind of staple in town with a totally new concept?
I definitely remember looking at Rick when we found out what the space was that we were going to look at. Once the contract fell through and the broker calls me and he says, that space you're interested in has opened up again. Do you want to go look at it? Yep. Okay. We signed our NDA paperwork. Then we knew where we were going. And I remember having to look at Rick and be like, is it a problem for you that the groom's dinner for my first marriage was in the back room at the Windsor Stube? And I remember him being like, nope. And I was like, okay, me neither. Moving on, like right past that. So like, had I been there before? Yeah. Do I have a lot of memories of it? No. I think by the time the Windsor Stube was getting ready to open, I was at that same time heading towards St. Paul for college. And so there was a little bit of a gap there where I had been in Hudson. And as I was getting ready to go, was about that same time Windsor Stube was coming in. So I don't have a lot of memories of the Windsor Stube or the Irish pub that was there before that. And I think that might have been just because I wasn't 21 yet when that pub was there. Something like that. So there was a crossover of some of that there. Was there a lot of pressure to take over that space? I wish I would have known at the time that there was that kind of pressure. Like, I wish I would have understood how many people loved that restaurant and the pressure that it did put on us. We didn't know at the time. Mm-hmm. I just thought, oh, it's a restaurant. We'll open. We'll have great food. People will come. turns out it's not that easy. But I think we held over a couple menu items.
I was going to say a little tribute to the Windsor Steelers.
Right. Yeah. We were able to maintain some of the employees too. Okay. I went in there the last week that the Windsor Sioux was open, and I volunteered my help to Marie, trying to understand how people move in and out of the space, meet some employees, meet some customers, learn anything I could from her after her tenure in that space and in the industry. And people really loved the mushroom soup. You got to keep the mushroom soup. I met the staff and I said, you know, unfortunately with the purchase, your employment is terminated, you know, sign up for unemployment right away, like do that today. Mm-hmm. And then our intention is to employ you, like fill out an application. We have to restart that whole process, but our intention is to employ you. And our intention was to be closed for as little time as possible so that they would be able to come work and not have to find a different position in those weeks that were the sort of in between weeks. So maintaining some of that staff helped too. So Josh Beach is in our kitchen. He was in Marie's kitchen for 15, 16 years. Hmm. He still makes the mushroom soup and he'll tell you it's the same recipe, but I use thyme now instead of marjoram. So I smoke the mushrooms. So similar recipe, yeah. a great menu staple. Yep, he still makes the strudel same way that the Windsor Sioux always had it. So that's a little helpful when you look at such a big change for people in that space. That makes the change a little bit easier, I think. Sure.
One of the things that Nicole touched on that I think was actually really important too was the fact that we did have a lot of the same staff. Mm-hmm. People came into the space. It was a new restaurant, new concept, but familiar faces.
Yeah.
So that, I think, in the beginning really helped to kind of wean people over to the new idea. One of the things in the beginning that we have Chad, our bartender, and one of the things we used to tease him about is he was very good at throwing the spiel out there because people recognized him. And he was very good at talking to people and getting people comfortable with the fact that things are changing. And this was new. And he was very good at getting people who were coming from farther away, looking for the German restaurant, hadn't quite heard the news yet. Mm. But he was very good at getting them to sit down and give us a shot. And I think in the beginning, that helped immensely.
Sure.
Because it wasn't just a new restaurant, new faces, and new everything in a small town like this.
Right.
It was familiar faces who believed in the idea that we had, in the dream that we had. And I think that was a huge part of what brought us to where we are today.
Sure. So obviously you guys kind of bring a new element of food to the food scene here in Hudson. And as I mentioned at the top of the podcast, when I had Paul Rohde of Agave Kitchen on, he gave you guys a nice shout out and just said that, you know, it kind of adds that elevated dining experience that didn't really exist downtown. How much does that mean to hear from maybe other restaurateurs in town or other people that you guys are a great asset to the community? What does that mean?
Yeah, that was huge for us. We don't know Paul Rohde personally, but we know what he does here in town and how he's been successful in this industry. And so as newcomers, as first-time owners, to hear someone with that experience say that or to see other restaurant owners come into our space and choose our restaurant as a place to go dine, those kind of compliments are huge for us.
Yeah. Rick, what did that mean to you to hear that?
To be blunt about it, I thought it was really cool. Yeah. Like Nicole said, we don't know Paul personally. We know a few of his employees.
Sure.
We've heard good things about the guy. I've personally felt that the guy, you know, seeing his Facebook page and stuff for Agave, I think he's a really huge member of the community. And to have somebody like that say something that nice about your restaurant without even knowing you is huge. Yeah. It's really cool.
Now that Black Rooster Bistro has been open for a while now, what lessons have the two of you learned about opening and running a restaurant? I suppose maybe you've had experience maybe running it, but opening one and just kind of all the lessons that go into that. What have you learned since you opened?
I think for me, simply put, there's a lot more to it than meets the eye. I've been doing this since I was 19 years old after going to a one-year trade school. And I thought I knew everything about everything going into this. And it very quickly turned into, after the first couple months, kind of looking at each other and being like, I didn't know that that was a thing that we had to worry about. Right. And it kind of got done. We built our house when we moved out here, and there was a lot of that same kind of feeling opening a restaurant. Like, what kind of glasses do you want? I don't know, glass ones? What kind of forks do you want? What kind of spoons do you want? And all those little details that you don't really take into account as far as how much it actually affects the flow of the restaurant or the eating in the restaurant,
yeah,
or things like that. I guess for the most part too is not to sound like I was naive going into it, but the amount of work and the amount that it really takes over a lot of your time and yeah, energy. We close on Mondays and Tuesdays, and those Mondays and Tuesdays are for our employees to take time off. But behind the scenes, Nicole's putting in orders. I'm putting in my orders. We're discussing what we're going to do the next week, what we're going to do the next month. We have our anniversary coming up. What are we going to do for that? So it's always a situation of where we try our best to pull away for a few hours every week, usually when the kids are home. But it's a lot of work all the time.
Yeah. Nicole, how about you? What have you learned through this whole process here?
I mentioned before thinking that it would be easy. We have good food. People will come eat it. And so that was my first big lesson, is that change is hard and new things are scary. in this town, that has proven true. Change from a restaurant that was there for so long and something new going in, especially in the economic climate that we're dealing with, the inflation that we're dealing with, mm-hmm, people only have so much money left over at the end of all of that. And to sort of take a risk and try a new place with that,
yeah,
it is a lot to ask right now. And so we definitely learned that change is hard and new things are scary. That was our biggest year one lesson. This is a lot. There's a lot more to it than you think. And another thing that I've learned is, I mentioned I went to art school, I have an art degree. My art degree was in communication design, so advertising and stuff like that. And that has changed so drastically in those 20-some years that we don't see commercials on TV really as much, right?
But mostly social
we're
media.
We're streaming our TV. We're streaming our music. So there's not even commercials on the radio. We don't really pick up a newspaper and read it in that tangible way that we used to do. So social media is huge, right? How do we utilize that? And learning that whole beast as a part of also learning how to be a business owner and balancing that with having two kids and teenagers and busyness and driving and schedules and balance has been a lot of the year two learning.
Yeah. We've talked throughout this about just the local aspect of it. You guys, Nicole grew up here, Rick, you grew up nearby, and just supporting the local community. You do things like you get your meat from RJ's, or at least some of it, I don't know how much, but you do other various kind of tastings and pairings from local distilleries and wineries, which I think is cool. And I think you've got some different classes or things like that that people can sign up for. Why is it so important for the two of you to embrace that local aspect?
We learned in the management positions that we had during COVID how challenging supply chain and distribution issues had become. So we knew in opening shortly after the COVID pandemic that one of the best ways around those issues would be to use as much local product as possible. So how do you avoid shipping things all the way across the country and having them get lost and misplaced and take forever, and the impact that has on the environment. If we can get our products locally, we avoid all of that.
Yeah.
That was number one. I don't think we understood the impact that would have until we got closer to opening. I remember going with Marie up to RJ's to pick up some of her sausages and stuff, because RJ's was working with the Windsor Stube.
Sure.
And seeing that transaction go down between the two of them, between Marie and Rick, and having then Rick say, well, that's going to be a big impact on RJ's. They're going to lose that weekly business with the Windsor Soup closing. Yeah. And I remember him being like, I'm going to go to them and I'm going to let them know that we want to continue that relationship so they don't have that loss either. And to start to see it on a level where those kind of things make a difference in your community was really powerful. And for me, running the bar program, looking at the cocktail menu, building cocktails, and finding such amazing quality spirits right here in the Midwest, right here in New Richmond, right here in Alexandria, right here in Hudson, with Lucky Guys, there's some really quality product out there being made that was a no-brainer for me to highlight that stuff. Once I've discovered the real quality of that, the 45th parallel and Lucky Guys using grain from the community as well. Like they're looking at, you know, farms in New Richmond and Roberts and supporting those farms.
Yeah.
So not only are we supporting the local distilleries, we're also in turn supporting those local farmers. And so just trying to see how all that came full circle really impacted us and keeps our resolve very firm to continue to support as many local businesses as we can.
That's very cool. Rick, anything you want to add on there?
Yeah, I think that Nicole hit it on the head pretty well there. I think one of the things too for me is knowing that the money that we're spending on our products is staying in the community.
Yeah.
I know she talked a little bit about RJ's, but I remember early on in the whole process, people coming to talk to me about, you should use us for your meats, you should use us for this. And I just remember as a kid going to the local meat market. We'd go to Hagberg's or we'd go to Big Steer and we'd get steaks. And I remember the relationship that you seeing my family having with the meat cutter behind the thing. And I just remember that feeling and just knowing that the people that are cutting your meat and taking care of that product for you care about it as much as you care about what you do on your end, putting it to, you know, putting it on the fire and then making it the right temperature and then sending it out, tasting really good for everybody. I also think that when we were in this process, part of being as local with like the liquor and stuff that we do in the spirits is we knew the scene in Hudson and we didn't want to just fall into, oh, here's another one of those restaurants, just like this restaurant, just like this restaurant. And we love all the restaurants downtown. We eat at them a lot. You'll see posts of us going to restaurants and then taking video of us walking back with it on days that we don't feel like cooking ourselves lunch whatever. But it was just, how do we set ourselves apart from everybody else? Sometimes it's not as pleasant for the people that come in when they just want a Seagram 7, but we don't have Seagrams. But again, it's also part of the cool part of educating the people to like, hey, I understand that you like this, but this is made 20 miles up the road and it's just as good, if not better.
Right.
We've been this year, it hasn't been something we've talked about yet, but we started talking with YMCA's Camp St. Croix up there. They have a farm program that they're doing.
Yeah.
And they supply food to the food shelf and other local charities. And one of the things that we've talked to them about is we're going to be taking their kind of their overage, whatever they have at the end of the week that they can get rid of, they're going to donate to us.
Cool.
We're going to put that on the menu as some sort of feature.
Yeah.
And then we'll donate the proceeds of that back to Camp St. Croix.
Oh, very cool.
We're actually talking with them about doing one of our 5-course tasting dinners with everything from the farm because they raise chickens, they have eggs, they have all that stuff. So that'll be coming up in August.
Okay.
So those are the things that it's taken us a little time to get there, but those are the things for me that are exciting.
Yeah.
Benny from the new Hudson To Go, he's been a longtime friend of mine and he kind of put me on to that because he's the chef over
there. That's right. Yeah.
So he kind of came to me and put me in the farmer together on that. And it just, we talked about it last year and it just didn't quite come together, but this year it's working great so far. So
that's awesome.
I'm excited to start that whole program.
Yeah. I love that. And that'll be cool to check that out when that, like you said, in August, so people should check that out when it gets to be that time. Two last questions for the two of you here. Curious for each of you, do you have a favorite thing on your menu, whether that's the food menu or the cocktail menu? I know Nicole, you mentioned that's kind of your specialty is the cocktail program. So I guess Nicole, we'll start with you on that, if either food or drink favorite.
Definitely hard to pick. The Campfire Old Fashioned is the most popular cocktail on our menu. Probably my favorite as well. Local bourbon, a simple syrup made with marshmallow root, which is a plant that we started growing in our own garden before we quickly defeated that whole purpose by its popularity. So now it's organically grown in California for us, but chocolate bitters, and then we finish it with some wood smoke. So it feels like you're sitting around a campfire in a summer night. And I think that nostalgia piece really helps that drink sort of soar in popularity.
I can vouch for it, by the way. I've had
it. Thank you. The favorite thing on the food menu right now for me is the duck breast.
Okay.
It's one of Rick's favorite things to cook, and has this cherry chutney and jerk honey over a cauliflower puree and some roasted carrots. That it's definitely my favorite right now. But menu always changes seasonally, so
that's right.
There's always something new to try and a different set for that dish. So always excited to see what the new spring vegetables will bring, but currently the duck is my favorite.
Sounds pretty good. Yeah. Rick, how about you? I don't know how often you, I'm sure you taste the things you cook, but how often do you actually get something off the menu and what's your favorite?
It's hard for me to pick a favorite. I would honestly say that for me, my favorite part of the whole process is just the creativity to come up with it. Right now, my favorite thing to eat would probably be the cavatelli with the wild boar bolognese and the fried burrata.
Ooh, sounds good. I'm getting hungry right now.
That one is my favorite because I think at this point, other than the specials that we've been running lately, it's the newest one that I've kind of come up with. And it's something that I've wanted to do for a while. And it was also my way of kind of introducing wild game to the menu.
Okay. So
it's been something that I've been trying to do a little bit more, kind of slowly introducing new things to the menu that might be a little outlandish and a little scary,
sure.
But also getting people to remember that we're not going to put it out there if it doesn't taste good.
Right.
And that's kind of my whole fun of it is putting the puzzle pieces together. It sounds weird to say, but I think everything's kind of my favorite. I really like our burger. I have eaten too many of those in the last couple of years, but yeah, I think it's really hard for me to choose. I'd have to say all of it.
That's a fair answer.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, the last question I'll leave both of you with, and this is a question I ask everyone, and I'll maybe close with Nicole as the Hudson native. But Rick, I'll start with you, and then Nicole, what is your favorite thing about Hudson?
My favorite thing about Hudson is probably the community in the small town feel of it. I remember just the other day I was walking in to work, and the church bell started going off, and it was kind of strange. It kind of washed over me in this whole, like, I stopped and I kind of looked around and I realized like what a cool little town this is. Mm-hmm. And it's so cool that I get to be a part of it, not only living here, but also being a business owner here and meeting the people in town and saying hi. And, you know, you run into somebody at the store and, hey, how are you doing today? And it's just, it's a really, really cool feeling, especially after spending so much time working in the cities and not really feeling that personal connection to the people. One of the things that struck me the other day, too, was one of my cooks, Dan, was one of my lead cooks down at the grill, and he's moved out here now, and he's working with us in the kitchen. And it's funny watching him because he's still blown away when he gets compliments from the diners on how good the food is that he's just prepared. Like, that's the best pasta I've had, or that's the best walleye I've had. And that's all coming from him. And it's still crazy to see because we didn't get that a lot at the grill. It was just everybody expected that from us, and everybody was, because of the prestige of the place, nobody ever thought that. They didn't feel like they had to say anything. So to see him and to see Reese and to see everybody that works in our restaurant, to see the way that those compliments affect them has been really cool. And it's just because of the community that we have here. It's a really, really cool community to be part of.
That's awesome. Nicole, I'll leave this last one to you here.
Yeah, he stole my answer. No, definitely the downtown community, the business owners community. When we became a part of that, my love for Hudson grew tenfold. I always loved Hudson. I loved that it was, you know, close to the cities yet removed, you know, small town feel, but you're not far off from the airport or shopping or anything you needed. The space, the pace over here once you cross the river being that much less was always my favorite part of Hudson. But now to walk downtown and to really see the beauty that's downtown recognize the people that are down there and say hey and hi to customers and other business owners. And the community that we have is really unique. And it's very obvious to me now as a business owner that we have something really special here in town.
That's awesome. Well, I really appreciate the two of you sharing your journey, how you got to be owners of Black Rooster Bistro here in Hudson, Nicole and Rick Fraser. Thank you so much for taking the time today. Thanks for bringing your talents to Hudson, to the downtown food scene, and bringing just another great restaurant to this restaurant scene here in town. So I thank you both for the time today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thanks to everybody for listening to this episode of St. Croix Stories. If you haven't subscribed yet, be sure to check it out wherever you get your podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify. You can find it at stcroixstories.com. Also give us a follow on social media. And until next time, have a great day.